Okay, good morning. So I first want to share with you an email that I received just as we kind of segue out of the topic of the Banksy issue. I wanted to mention I received an email from Moreno Rabbi Yonah Reis Shlita, who I'm sure you're all familiar, served as the Dean of the Yeshiva, and before and after that in prominent positions in Dayanus. And it's also a good time to mention that his first Sefer just came out, including much of his expertise in Dayanus, Sefer Kanfei Yonah, which is available in the Beis Medrash and is highly, highly recommended. So I received an email from him, which I want to share with you, even though it focuses on the detail that we did not talk about, but it's worth just calling it to our attention. So he sent me an email referring, I guess he saw on YU Torah, about the Banksy shredding incident Shirim. But you see, his Ha'ara doesn't directly address what we said. He writes, I hope to have a chance to listen. So far he hasn't, but he made the following Ha'ara, which is on a different point. And I quote, it occurred to me that this may be an interesting, if flawed, illustration of the Misa'ana becoming the Ma'ana. If indeed the shredding significantly increased the value of the painting, in which case the original Ma'ana cannot insist of revoking the transaction based on the Ona, assuming that the Misa'ana indicated, as I believe they did from the outset, that they want to keep the painting anyway. From what I understand, the painting has actually increased in value, which is quite incredible. So essentially, what's he addressing here? So he's addressing the point that we said we were going to gloss over, right? The question of whether the transaction actually took place already. So he's working off the assumption that, understandably, that the transaction is not finalized, just in the case of the actual incident, and therefore the question is one of Ona, is one party cheating the other? So if the concern is, let's say, for example, that if you want to view the painting, the painter, Banksy, as the seller, so now he is providing the buyer with an item that's different than what they contracted to buy. And under auction, they determined that the price was whatever, £1 million for that item. Now he's giving him a defective item, he's giving her a damaged item, so should that be a problem of Ona? But perhaps it's flipping, because if the value actually went up, maybe she's the one committing Ona, because now she's underpaying for the price of the painting if the value actually went up. She got it for a steal now at £1 million, and it actually increased in value. So it's just another angle to consider in this whole question, not the angle that we looked at really from a Bava Kamma perspective. It's really more of a Bava Metzia perspective, the fourth part of Bava Metzia, the issues of Onav, paying the proper price. So assuming that the question is now, how does the transaction proceed? So who is potentially a victim and who is potentially an oppressor here? Is one person taking advantage of the other in terms of the price? So it's an interesting question vis-a-vis that. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention, even though that wasn't an angle that we were really pursuing. We're looking at it from the Bava Kamma perspective rather than the Bava Metzia perspective. However, to segue out of that to the more common case. So we mentioned that this incident is certainly an unusual kind of incident, and we looked at it through the prism of a more commonly discussed topic in post-game with the two valuable items, and one gets destroyed, doubling the value of the other. So that's discussed a little more frequently, as we mentioned, but it's also kind of unusual. So I don't know how many times that actually happens in real life. But what is a much more common issue, so we shouldn't leave this discussion without saying a little bit more about it, is what about the question of property that is insured? Right, we alluded to that in the first week. But here you have a much more common scenario where we can damage an item, but theoretically you are not being mafsid the owner. So this is clearly a very lemaisa kind of thing. This is the thing that does come up. So what happens if you damage something and the victim is getting compensated by the owner? So this was discussed in the classical Achronim. Was I being compensated by insurance? Why did I say compensated by the owner? Is being compensated by insurance. So this was discussed in some classical achronim. There was a machlokes between the Tshuvas Hare B'Samim. You can find this on Hebrew books if you look for it. The Tshuvas Hare B'Samim. You can find it on Hebrew books. And the Tshuvas Marsham. Concerning the question, essentially, of how do you view what's happening when insurance pays? And clearly this does overlap a lot with what we spoke about. And the Hare B'Samim takes the position that if the loss is covered, so then the Mazik doesn't have to pay for it. Now, there's a sefer called the Tshuvas Orchas Mishpat, which you can also find in Hebrew books if you look for it. So he also discusses this insurance question. And he also cites the Reb Chaim that we've mentioned, quoted from a few sources last week. So he quotes this Reb Chaim. You can find the Reb Chaim also quoted in a couple of places, such as, just to add another place you can find it a little more accessibly, is the Sefer Chavetzelos HaSharon Al HaTorah, which we referred to also the first week in Parshas Emor. So he has an essay also about this question of insurance, and he quotes the Reb Chaim also. So the Reb Chaim, if you recall from last week, it's a pretty interesting kind of position that essentially you are chayiv to restore the item. So it shouldn't matter whether it's covered by any other increase or any outside compensation. Except that if it's 100% covered, so then it's not called a Maisa Nezek and you're off the hook. But if it's anything less than 100% covered, if it's 90% covered, then it's called a Maisa Hezek, and then you have to pay for the whole thing, 100%. You know, a very brisker kind of approach. Hi.
So, wait, if the item is 100% covered by insurance, it's not even considered a case of Nezek?
That's what it sounds like from Reb Chaim, and that's how the Sefer Ochos Mishpat assumes. Which, again, is a very mechudish kind of view, but it's a very brisker perspective, but this is how it comes out. So that's initially the way the Sefer looks at it, and therefore he puts it as consistent with the Tshuvas Hare B'Samim, that if it's covered 100%, so indeed you're off the hook. But then as the Ochos Mishpat goes on, so what would be considered enough of a nezek to call it a maisa hezek? So what if the issue, as is commonly the case, is that insurance will cover your loss, but from here on in, your premiums are going to go up. So you're going to lose money in the long run because of that. So can you call that a Maisa Hezek, to define it as a Maisa Hezek? If you say that, on the one hand, you didn't lose any money for this item, because it was covered 100% by insurance, but you are losing money in the long run because your premium goes up. Maury, what do you think? Right, so that's how he assumes. He says that he thinks is a grama, and therefore that can't be defined as a Maisa Nezek, which is, you know, I guess particularly appropriate, because grama, as we've seen, is particularly relevant to defining something as a maisa, and that's all we're trying to do here, is to establish whether it's a maisa or not. So he doesn't think that that is a valid reason to call it a maisa nezek. I think Jed and Sammy?
What's a premium?
A premium is what you pay in order to make the insurance work. You know, that in order to get insurance, you have to pay a certain amount every month or whatever the period is. And if you don't pay that, you're not going to get paid back later. So usually, or let's say, for example, if somebody has probably a lot of kinds of insurance, but if somebody has a claim put, let's say if somebody has got insurance on their car and they get into an accident, so what tends to happen is the insurance will pay, but then from here on in, they're going to assess you differently. And they're going to say you're no longer somebody who is such a simple risk. You've had problems in the past. And from here on in, they raise your rates. So maybe you should be able to say that I took a loss here because now I have a higher insurance bill from here on in. Sammy, you wanted to...
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't this... I mean, it sounds like any insurance company, your premium would go up. So why wouldn't that be considered like RV? Like, you know that it's not even like a Garmin where it's like, oh, it might go up, but you know it's going up.
All right, it's a fair question how exactly you define Garmin. We haven't gotten up to that yet, so what's in that category and what isn't. But I think here it's also essentially happening in a full remove, you know, because it's happening as a secondary step to what's going on. So it's going to be harder to fit that into a Garmin picture. We haven't fully defined yet what Garmin is. We mentioned as one possibility that it might have to do with the uncertainty or more greater certainty that something would happen. We have to still define that a little better. Hi.
Yeah, so then just to tighten the scope of Grumman, then mm-hmm. Grumman has to be something that has, like, you were involved with, let's say, the NYSA ASIC, but the what's going to fall out has nothing to do with you. Like, in this case, because it's the insurance company that's going to end up charging this guy more money, it's a Grumman.
Because it's a step removed. You're not the one costing him the money. You brought about a situation which made somebody else charge him more money.
This is definitely more removed than the case of Saga Misasik, I think.
Misasik? Which Misasik?
Misasik. Misasik.
Yeah, for sure. Right. So, here, but he also points out that the victim should have the right, though, to say that I don't want to make the insurance claim. Because if I put the insurance claim, they're going to now charge me more in the future, and you are chayiv to pay me anyway, as the mazik. So the mazik can't say, oh, don't come to me, you're covered by insurance. And the nizik doesn't want to go to the insurance because it's going to make his rates go up. So presumably he has the right to do that.
But then wouldn't the mazik just be able to say, I'm going to have to pay you the insurance?
But if I go to the insurance route, it's going to hurt me. So I don't want to go to the insurance route. So meikra din, you have a chiyuv to pay me. That's why I also don't understand his next line. So maybe you'll take that side more. Because he then goes on to say that because the victim has the right to not go the path that's going to cost him higher premiums, so the only way in which the mazik can say you have to turn to the insurance instead is if the mazik says, I'm willing to accept the cost of all the increases, which is probably in his interest because presumably it's still less than the overall hezek. So he'll say, you go make the insurance claim and whatever your rate goes up, I'll absorb those costs, which are presumably less. Although I'm not sure why even then he has the right. If the mazik is chayiv, and it's not clear to me why he has the right to say, oh, but because the nizik has another route to get compensated, he has to pursue that route before coming to me. It's not an arev. In an arev, that's the din, that one, at least one type of arev. If somebody guarantees somebody else's loan and that person defaults, so the borrower can come to the lender, rather, can come to the arev and say, you have to pay. And depending on what kind of Ariv it is, the Ariv can say, well, first make sure that he's not paying you before coming to me. But I don't see why the Mazik necessarily has that right to say, well, there's another way you can get compensated. You have to pursue that. Shmuley, was that your question?
No, so, but okay, yes. Tony, does it make a difference if you're replacing the object or bringing the object back to 100% where it was before? As in, for example, I really break someone's car. So insurance gives them the money, but I would rather get a new car as opposed to fixing all of the dents or whatever, because I believe so that the value of the car, even though it has no dents and all the paint is perfect, the value is going to be less because it was in an accident before.
So it's interesting, and this sefer Ochras Mishpat, I can show you where to find it online if you want to see this discussion. So first he draws this comparison to Reb Chaim's position. And if you recall, so Reb Chaim's position is based on our Gemara and Daf Gimel about the bush that's going to grow back. And first he makes that comparison, but in the footnote there he has a discussion that maybe there's a difference, that when it comes to the bush itself is going to grow back 100%. While the car, you can replace the car, but the car is being replaced with another item that you buy with the money. So even though it's theoretically identical, but that's through this replacement, maybe it's not 100% comparable. Maybe we still can draw a difference between an item that will regenerate and something that can be replaced through spending funds. So I think that correlates to your question. So he considers that that may indeed be a distinction here. Maury?
This might be a broader question, so I guess it's okay to move on yet, but when we say that Ezekiel Shea, you know, would constitute, if we're evaluating it as maybe going after the value, they can count kind of mala. So I'm just thinking of that.
You mean this category should be called Hezek Shea?
Meaning if it's being, if we're just putting this as the category of damage that doesn't constitute a loss necessarily, so then isn't that similar to, I think we already.
Well, it's the reverse. That was also, Hezek Shen and Iker was also something that we saw as the other side of this possibility, that if we focus on the damage to the item, so that, and regardless of the cost, so that's where you get the insurance kind of question or the stamp kind of question, because the item is damaged, but the value remains constant. And Hezek Shen and Iker is the inverse possibility, that if we focus more on the loss rather than on the item, so then you could come to that conclusion that the item is intact, but it doesn't have value anymore because of whatever damage was inflicted upon it. It's really the opposite. It's the inverse. On Hezek Shen and Iker? So, seem to paskin that at least Bishogeg, one is putter for Hezek Shen and Iker. Right? So, just to, if it helps to recap, the four variables that we saw that first week, where we had these four factors in order to be chayiv, in order to match the pasuk. One was there should be a maisa hezek. Two was that the item should be damaged. Three is there should be a loss to the owner, a financial loss to the owner. And four is that the item should lose value. So in terms of psak, in terms of the four, so the first one is essentially a grama. If you tweak that one, if you say there's no maisa hezek, that's where you get grama. And the rule is grama is pater, bidine adam. But Asr, Chayiv B'dinei Shamayim, and even B'dinei Adam, probably the basis for a necessary settlement. In terms of the second variable, Hezek Shein and Iker, so that's a discussion of the Gemara in Gittin, and we seem to paskin at least B'shogeg is Pater. And then the last two tweaks is where there's more of a discussion in the Achrona. The one we're talking about now, where the item is damaged but the value is covered. And the other case was where the item wasn't worth so much anymore, but it has a high replacement cost, like prescription glasses. So it's a loss to the owner because he's going to have to pay a lot to replace them, but it was never worth too much in the shuk because it's not for everybody else. So there wasn't really a change in monetary value, but there was a loss to the owner. Okay, so with that, so there is a, it's also the topic, I have to figure out when to fit this topic in, because it's a fascinating topic. I don't know, maybe we should put it instead of this, the whole question of items that have sentimental value, which is a fascinating topic. But maybe we'll find time to squeeze that in before going further, but it's a topic which has other implications. All right, in any event, so the question of insurance. So here, this is the point Orchos Mishpat makes, that he thinks the increased premium is not a basis for a nezek, but it's a basis for the nizok to say, I'm not taking that path, and that the only way the mazik can compel him to is if he says, I will bear the cost of the increased premium. But I'm not sure, I don't understand personally why he has the right to say that either. I think it's always probably going to be, I guess it depends on one circumstance, but very often it's going to be easier to get the mazik to pay than it is to get insurance to pay. So it would seem that if the nizok feels he doesn't want to pursue the insurance, he'd rather pursue the mazik. I'm not sure why he shouldn't have the right to do that. I would have thought the only question here is if lamaisa he's getting paid twice. So if insurance is paying him, does he still have the right to be toveya from the mazik? And vice versa, if he gets paid by the mazik, so presumably he has to inform the insurance that he's getting paid and should have to do whatever their rules are. So I would have thought that's really the question here. What happens about getting paid twice, not about whether the mazik has the right to say, oh, I command you to pursue that route. So that's another detail which is part of the discussion. And as we mentioned, there is a machlokes that you have on the one hand the view of the Hari B'Samim and some readings of Reb Chaim that maybe there should be a p'tur under some circumstances, and others such as the Chalkas Yoav has a tshuva about this, and he says that you're a chayiv no matter what because he understands the chayiv to come from a Maisa Hezek, and therefore it doesn't matter whether there is coverage from somewhere else. Now, the Marsham also understands that the whole nature of insurance, it's not about replacing the item. This is a chakira one could have in insurance, bichlal, and presumably there's different models and there's different arrangements which can lend to different interpretations. But you understand that basically it's a contract that you have with the insurance company that you pay into the system with a premium. And the deal is that if something happens to the insured item, they pay the amount that is assigned to that. And the question of whether somebody else is also obligated to pay is a whole separate question. And again, whether you have to give the money back to the insurance, that's also going to be a separate question depending on the terms of the agreement. But his point is that the nature of the agreement isn't that they are replacing the item, it's that they are contracted to give you money under these circumstances. Now this happens to have huge ramifications in another area of halacha. For example, it comes in a couple of places in halacha, but it has major ramifications where in Aruch Chaim. Can you guess where in Aruch Chaim this comes up big time? The nature of chakir and the nature of insurance. Where in Aruch Chaim would that come up? I'll give you a hint. Hilchos Yom Tovim. I'll give you another hint. It's the next Yantiv coming up, as long as we skip Chanukah and Purim and Tu B'Shvat. Pesach. So how does it come up? Bedikas chametz, mechiras chametz, right? So that's a big discussion in Achronim. My friend Rabbi Tzvika Reisman has a nice discussion about this in one of his forum. The question of what happens if you sell your chametz and the chametz is insured, and let's say if it's just theoretically insured, that's one thing. But let's say you sell it, that's itself a discussion, but more practically, let's say you sell the chametz, and over the course of Pesach, something happens to the chametz. Can you claim insurance for that? So there's all kinds of details you have to figure out. First of all, it goes back to being a Choshen Mishpat question. Can you legitimately go to the insurance company and say you lost the chametz when really you had sold it to someone else? How does that affect the nature of the obligation? And the Choshen Mishpat question goes back to being an Aruch Chaim question, that if you maintain such an interest in this chametz so that if something happens to it, you're going to get compensated, so can you still call that getting rid of your chametz? That's a big discussion. Maybe Pesach time we can revisit some of the chametz-related details about that. But it goes into a whole chakira about what is insurance. Is insurance essentially covering, replacing the item, so this stands in the place of the chametz? Or is it a contract that if something happens, you're going to get compensated, but or going to get paid, but it doesn't necessarily reflect the replacement of the item? Just like you could find with life insurance, this is the basis for many murder mysteries. You can theoretically make all kinds of people the beneficiary of a life insurance policy. So on some level, insurance sometimes is a contract a deal with a company that, okay, under these circumstances, we're going to pay. And doesn't necessarily mean, especially in the case of life insurance, you're not replacing the person, but whatever it is, it doesn't necessarily have a meaning beyond that. So that's a discussion, how to understand what insurance means, and it's going to affect Hilchos Pesach, and it's going to affect this also. So do we say that the item has been replaced by the insurance company, or do we say, no, it's irrelevant to this item, that's just the contract that you have with them that they're going to pay you if something happens, but it doesn't constitute a replacement of the item as far as the Mazik's responsibilities are concerned. And again, the question where it goes in the other direction, so let's say if the Mazik does pay you, so then presumably you have to inform the insurance company and see how that impacts things. Now, there are those who suggest, you have to look historically, it's discussed in the Orchas Mishpat also, that maybe nowadays, so he's suggesting that this was not always the case, but if nowadays, if the insurance company says that the deal is, we don't pay you if you get compensation from anyone else, so then maybe it's defined differently. It seems to be assuming that there was possibly a shift in how insurance was conceptualized, or in how things that predated our contemporary insurance was conceptualized, that if the insurance company explicitly makes it contingent on whether you are being compensated by anyone else, so then maybe that makes it more into a specific replacement of this item, and maybe that should make a difference. So essentially, it continues to be a machlokas achronim, how exactly an issue of insurance compensation is going to affect things. So it's going to end up in a Beis Din if this question comes up. But this here is probably both a more common occurrence than the situations we've been talking about until now, and also probably a more even-sided machlokas. So that's a real question as far as what policy would be regarding an actual dispute between two people on this question. The issue of sentimental damage, of damage to an item has sentimental value, that's an interesting topic also, so maybe if you want, we'll say a few words about that tomorrow, I'll give you a little bit to look at about that. But I just also, before going to Daf Dalet, I wanted to call your attention to kind of a side topic, which could also just plug into a very general Bava Kamma question, and also even this specific question we've been talking about. On Tosfos on Daf Beis, Dibra Maschel Lo, Tosfos brings up an issue of whether, when it comes to the Chiyuvim of Nezikin, and the Avos Nezikin, whether we say Ein Onshin Min Hadin. We normally have a rule that you can't derive an onesh from a kal v'chomer from somewhere else. That if we have one din in the Torah that prescribes an onesh, so we know, for example, at least in the context of a chiyuv misa, that if you're chayiv misa for a certain avera, you can't say, well, okay, this avera you're chayiv misa for. So that avera is worse. Kal v'chomer, you're chayiv misa for that also. We say ein onshin min hadin. In this case, a din means a kal v'chomer, so we don't use a kal v'chomer to derive an onesh. So Tosfos on Daf Beis and Bava Kamma raises the question, and it's a different perspective on Daf Dalet and Beis in Bava Kamma. So I'll give you that to look at tomorrow also. But Tosfos raises the question whether you should say Ein Onshin Min Hadin regarding the Chiyuve Nezikin from one to each other. Tosfos quotes the Mechilta, for example, that says, why does the Torah talk about both opening up a bore and digging a bore? You know, if you're chayiv for opening up a bore, so for sure you're chayiv for digging a bore in the first place. So Tosfos quotes the Mechilta as applying here the concept of Ein Onshin Min Hadin, that we shouldn't have a kal v'chomer to create a chiyuv for one from the other. So what do you think about that language of using the phrase ein onshin min hadin to talk about not liability in the zikin? Does that strike you as appropriate, inappropriate? Sammy?
I think it might be tricky because of the concept of avos and todos.
Okay, so I mean, already there's a notion of deriving one thing from the other.
Yeah.
Right, so that's essentially how Tosfos gets into the conversation, that we got to figure out how do we have flexibility here to move from one concept to the other. What about Einon Shem and Hadin? Yeah? Okay.
You should learn out Knas, as in more, or Knas more like Svara powered, I guess.
Not necessarily, but you might be onto something else by focusing on the word Knas. Well, one question that the Stipler observes, and this I didn't see this inside, I think it's maybe in the older versions of the Stipler, not in the current version of the Stipler, but that's what I saw quoted, I'll mention in a second. That it sounds like the assumption here that Tosfos is invoking is that the chiyuvim of Nezikin are viewed as onshin. Right? That you're paying as an onesh for causing the hezek. So does that reflect back on the general question we spoke about in the first week? About what the liability for Nezikin is based on? Is it based on some Isser Lahazik? Or is it based on a deficiency in Shmira? Or is it based on a third possibility, neither of the two, but that you have simply liability for what your Mammon does? So the Stipler invokes that whole discussion here. Rav Asher Weiss, in his Sefer in Bava Kamma, has an interesting discussion about this, where he says he doesn't think it's relevant because he thinks, according to all the understandings, it's not an onesh. The obligation of paying for Nezikin is because there's a liability and there's a monetary loss there. But the question is, why is this your liability as the Mazik? So why are you the one who has to make up the loss? So you make up the loss because maybe it was your chiyuv shmira that you neglected, or maybe there's an isser involved, or maybe it's just because mamoncha. But he writes that shouldn't make one or the other into an onesh. So the question also ties in to this insurance issue and to the Banksy issue, because the logic of do you have to replace the item regardless of the monetary impact, or do you have to correct the monetary imbalance, really goes a little bit to this question. Why are you paying? Are you paying because you caused a hefsid to the other guy, in which case we should define it as a hefsid? Or are we saying that, no, this is an onesh because you were mazikit, and therefore you have to pay for what you did wrong? Hi.
That sounds silly. Is it possible to be a mazik without being having created a ma'ase hezek?
Like, well, that's part of what we've been discussing, right? That's where you get the grama, and that's where you get all these differences that we have to figure out which part of it is most tweakable. That's,
if you're going to say that it's an onesh, would it be hypothetically problematic if a mazik has insurance and the only mazik's getting paid through the mazik's insurance, not the mazik itself?
So that's also an interesting question, you know, and that's also something to consider from the insurance angle about how that affects things. You know, both the compensation to the nizuk and also the lack of it coming from the mazik, that's also an interesting question. And how this, it's hard to imagine it's going to necessarily affect things practically. The question whether hashkafically it affects things. Because if the victim is being paid by the mazik's insurance, so any way you look at it, presumably the same factors are going to apply. But hashkafically, it's an interesting question whether that should matter.
When we discussed that, isn't that essentially just the chisaron versus hefsid?
Yeah, but it could be that it connects to this whole question of what's the reason for the chiyuv. So it's interesting that it ties into this question of whether onshin min hadin is a relevant concept or not. So just to give you a little bit more background about the whole concept of onshin min hadin, so again, it's a question whether it's about misa specifically, or whether it extends to other things like Mammon and the Zikin, or in the middle, whether it applies to things like Malkus. There's a discussion about this in the Rav Yosef Engel Sefer in the Beis Otzer. So one reason to distinguish, you have to figure out, why do you have this idea of Einon Shemin Hadin? Why is that a concept at all? So Rashi and Sanhedrin, which I put on today's list, implies, you could read Rashi differently, but some Achronim read Rashi to say that the reason Einon Shemin Hadin is because we're afraid you might make a mistake. You know, Kal Vachomer maybe is compelling but may still be wrong. You may think you have a good Kal Vachomer and you might misapply it, so you can't issue an onesh based on that. There are other interpretations. The Marsha understands that the power of Kal Vachomer doesn't really work, because an onesh is also good for you because it's a kapara. So maybe the Torah wants you to get a kapara for the Aveira it mentions, but a worse Aveira, by your Kal Vachomer standards, maybe you don't deserve a kapara. So how do we know that just because you get this onesh for a lesser Aveira, that you should also get this onesh for a greater Aveira? Maybe the Torah wants you not to get the kapara and to pay a greater price later, Chas V'Shalom. That's another question. And part of the discussion is also that, as Rav Shecht has mentioned on occasion, that perhaps the reason we say Ein Onshin Min Hadin by Chiyuve Misa is because there's no klal, there's no principle that tells us when you're Chayiv Misa. Every Chiyuve Misa in the Torah is a Chiddush. We don't have any rule that says when there's a Chiyuve Misa. So if you don't have any rule, you can't look at it mathematically, and you can't say, all right, if it applies here, it applies there. But maybe that's why there might be a distinction between this and Malkus. Because when it comes to Malkus, there is a klal. Right? The klal is that every single Isser in the Torah gets Malkus without any exception, with the exception of many, many exceptions. Right? There are many categories of lavin that don't get Malkus, lav shein b'maisa, lav shenitin l'tashlumin, and lav hanitek l'zharis misas bezdin. There are a lot of exceptions, but they're all exceptions to the rule. The rule is a lav gets Malkus. So maybe you can say, okay, if there's a rule, then I can work mathematically within the rule and say, okay, if it applies here, it should also apply there. He points out that there is a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban and the Bahag, about how to count the mitzvos related to Mises Bezdin. That the Ramban counts it all the Mises Bezdin as one mitzvah of Biyarat Rav Mikarbecha, and the Rambam counts it as four, Skilas Reifa, Harig, and Chenek. But the Rambam also attacks the Bahag, because the Bahag counts every Chiyuv Misa as a separate mitzvah. So the Rambam says, why does he count every Chiyuv Misa as a separate mitzvah? He doesn't count every Chiyuv Malkus as a separate mitzvah. So it's inconsistent. Every Misa is separate and every Malkus isn't. So the Ramban defends the Bahag, even though he doesn't agree with him, he counts it only as one mitzvah. But he defends the Bahag, he says there's a big difference between Malkus and Misa. That when it comes to Malkus, there's a klal. So we could say, yeah, that's all one mitzvah. To give Malkus to every violation of a lav that fits the basic non-exception rules. But Misa, there's no klal. There's no rule as to when you give Misa. Every mitzvah is a chiddush. So he counts every separate chi of Misa as its own, because there's no general rule to work with. So as Rav Shechter points out, that could be why we say Onshin Min Hadin and Onshin Min Hadin when it comes to Misa. But Malkus, it's a question, because maybe Malkus there is a rule. I thought you could maybe apply that to a Gemara. It comes up later in Bava Kamma. That the Gemara tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to tell Moshe, don't start up with Moav, because Moshe thought it was a Kal Vachomer, that the Midianim only helped Moav and is supposed to fight the Midianim, so Kal Vachomer should fight Moav. So Rabbi Chanan and that Gemara asks, Ayin Unshin Min Adin, how could he make a Kal Vachomer that he should fight a nation based on a Kal Vachomer? So maybe it's because B'dinei B'nei Noach, there is a klal of Asarasan Zui Misasim. You start with the default of a Chiyuv Misa. So for there is a klal, and maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu thought you could make a Kal Vachomer. So in any event, that's just a little background on the concept of Ein Onshin Minhadin. And that could connect to the question of how to see the chiyuv of Teshlum Nezikin. And that's something which affects the entire principle of what Nezikin is about. And also, more locally, it perhaps affects this question of whether the Tashlumin is for the Hefzid or for the Chisaron, which goes to our local question of insurance and Banksy and the like. Okay, so I'll just quickly recap what we said, and then we'll daven mincha. So again, for tomorrow, I guess they'll decide either we'll start from Daf Dalet, or maybe I'll say a little bit about this issue of sentimental damage, because I'm not sure otherwise where else we'll put it in. So we'll see. Okay, well, this might be the most appropriate place for it. Okay, so just to quickly recap what we spoke about. So we mentioned Ibaris's Ha'ara about Banksy and its Nafkamina for Hilchos Ono, which we didn't get into, but just to call that Shaila to our collective attention. Then we shifted to the question of insurance, a much more common issue that seems to relate to the same principles. And we talked about how the Hari Besamim says one is Pater if the insurance covers it. And the Zorachas Mishpat connects us to Reb Chaim's unique Yesod about defining a Maisa Hezek by any kind of loss. And then we talked about whether the fact of premiums increasing, would that be considered a loss to make it into a Maisa Hezek? Or does the Nizek have the right to say, I'm not going to go to the insurance if you have to pay me because I don't want my rates to go up? And what if the Mazik says, I'll cover the increase in the rates? Does that obligate the Nizek to go to the insurance? And talked about how the Chalkes Yoav thought the Mazik is chayiv anyway, because that's the nature of the Chiyuv Hezek. And how the Marsham says that the nature of insurance is not that it replaces the item, it's simply a contract between the insured and the insurer. We mentioned it has major nafkaminas for Halchas Pesach and Mechiras Chametz, and what is the status of insured Chametz. And that ends up being an issue here. We mentioned there may have been some kind of shift in how insurance agreements are made in terms of when they make their payment completely contingent on not being compensated for someone else. How does that affect the nature of what's going on? And then we went into this question of Onshin Minhadin that Tosfos on Daf Beis and Daf Dalet Amud Beis bring up, whether that's relevant to figuring out liabilities in Nezikin, and the Stipler's associating of this with the idea of the concept of the liability being tied into an Isser or a Bitl Shmira or simply the ownership of the item. Rav Asher Weiss denying that because it says essentially the Tashlumin is still for the item. It's just a question of why are you Chayiv in the Teshlumin, it wouldn't be viewed as an onesh either way. Parenthetically, and I mentioned before, that he connects this to the Chassam Sofer that we mentioned the first week. If you recall, we mentioned the first day, the Tshuva's Chassam Sofer, that says that there's essentially a Chiyuv Nezikin because of the Surim in the Torah of Lifnei Iver, Lo Samar Adam Re'echa, and the like. So maybe you connect it to that, to say it's an onesh for violating these Dinim in the Torah, but that's a broader question, and it perhaps correlates to this question of what the Tashlumin is for. So then we gave a little more background on the concept of Ein Onshin Minhadin, on the question of whether it applies only to Misa or also to other things such as Mammon, and to, in the middle, to the question of Malkus. We talked about different explanations of why the concept exists. Is it because your Kal V'Chomer is unreliable? Is it because maybe there's only supposed to be a Kapara for this level of Avera, but not for a more intense Avera, like the Maharsha says? Or is it specifically about Misa, because Misa there's no Klal, so we don't have any mathematical approach, as opposed to Malkus, where there is a Klal, and you could take a mathematical approach. I mentioned how that was related to the Machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ramban, and the Bahag, about how to count the mitzvah of Mises Bezdin. And all of that is a little bit of background relevant to this whole broader question of what Ein Onshin Minhadin means and what it's going to apply to. All right, so we will stop here. We'd like to daven for us. Sam, we're daven.